All right, so welcome to this Born to Grow conference call. And to start out, I'm here with my dad, Edwin. And to start out, we're just going to talk really quickly and briefly on planning your garden, because this is the time of year to start, you know, really getting your garden planned out and nailed down of what you want to do. So we're going to breeze through that quickly. But the main focus of this call is interaction. We really want to interact with you. We want to hear what's going on in your garden, talk together, interact with each other, and talk about gardening questions, anything related to the garden. So we'll jump into that as soon as we finish talking about planning your garden here. So there's a few different aspects to planning your garden, and I've kind of divided it up into three sections here. Number one, I put down, you kind of have to choose your season. And here's what I mean by that. Because really, what the Born to Grow course is really encouraging you to do, what we're really encouraging you to do, is to really make gardening a lifestyle where you're growing even all year round. Take your garden straight through the winter. A lot of people can, and you might be surprised. There's people doing this in Maine. There's people doing it in Washington, you know, in some pretty cold places, in some places that you might not think that could happen. But you can, but it does take planning. And so knowing exactly what season you want or taking your garden through the whole year takes planning. You know, you have to figure out how early do you want to be harvesting different vegetables? How long do you want to take your gardening season? Maybe you don't want to take it all year. Do you want to take it into the fall? Do you want to extend it at all? How long do you want to be taking your season? And you may factor in as well. This all factors down to planning. You want to factor in as well. Do you want to do succession planting? Which succession planting is, for instance, if you're going to be planting veggies in the summer, say you want to be planting green beans, well, you might be harvesting off of them for a couple weeks, but then the plants kind of get old and they die back. So what you can do is plant a succession crop a little bit later than you plant your first crop so that you can have a continual harvest of green beans throughout the summer. You can actually plant several succession crops just by planting them, a few weeks apart at the start. So these are some things to consider when you're starting to think about planning your garden for this year, and I really highly encourage everyone here to make a good plan for your garden. It'll do a world of good for you when it comes down to the actual gardening of it. I would suggest that you get a calendar or some type of paper that you can actually mark down, you know, this is when I want to be planting this crop. I can expect to harvest it at this time, and physically, you know, put it down into your calendar so you can actually get a visual of what's going on for your garden throughout that year. And it can make it so much easier. So by the time your gardening season rolls around, as the weeks come by, instead of trying to figure out every week what I need to do, you can actually have a plan that you can go to and just see, well, this I need to be planting this and this and this this week. And, you know, I can be expecting to harvest it, you know, a couple months down the road. However that goes. So choose your season. Choose exactly when you want to be growing. And like I said, I would encourage you to think about the possibilities of even taking your season year-round. The next thing kind of goes along with choosing your season is choose your seeds. You know, now's the time to figure out exactly what you're going to be growing. And that's going to kind of depend on your season. You know, there are certain crops, vegetable crops, that do much better in cold weather. And there's certain vegetable crops that do really well in hot weather. For instance, okra is a very hot weather crop. It likes the heat, and it's not going to grow well in the winter. On the flip side of that, lettuce is a winter crop. It grows better in the cool. And if it gets too hot in the summer when you're growing lettuce, it can bolt easily and get bitter. So this is a great time to start going through the catalogs. You know, you can get free seed catalogs. If you haven't gotten any free seed catalogs yet, Johnny's Selected Seeds is a great one to get some seed catalogs from. If you go through the lesson on planning your garden, it lists several other seed catalogs that are great. that you can go through, and go through them and start choosing your seeds, going to grow. And like I said, that goes with choosing your season. And this might be getting a little bit ahead of where you are, but this is a great time to make note of what we call cover crops. Cover crops are a crop that you might put into your garden in a section of your garden that you're not, and this will depend on how big your garden area is, but if you have enough space and you're rotating your crops around, which you'll learn about as well in the course, you might have a section of garden that you want to let rest, and you can grow a cover crop, which you then till back into the ground, and it can actually add nutrients back into the ground and organic matter back into the ground. And so you can make a note if you are up on those. I'll just throw that in here. This is a great time to start planting those into your gardening season as well. And the third thing here is actually something that I already mentioned, and that is make your calendar. Actually sit down and do this. Plan when you're going to grow everything. Mark in all the dates. Mark in your cover crops if you're up to pulling those in. You might not have learned about those yet, so don't, you know, if you don't know about those, that's fine. It's not hugely critical. You'll learn about it as you go through the course. But mark those in, and then, like I said, I highly encourage you to draw everything out visually, and that can help, and that can really help you plan for a continual harvest throughout your season, because you can see visually about how long you can expect to be harvesting. And this is in the seed catalogs and online, you should be able to get estimates on, you know, it's going to be so many days until you can start harvesting the whatever vegetable it is, and you should even be able to find out, you know, how long that harvest time will be. Dad, did you have anything you wanted to add to a little rundown here on planting your garden?
I think that was pretty good. I guess the one thought on the cover crops is that, you know, if you are not growing year round in your garden, it's really great to occupy your unused ground with a cover crop. And maybe if you do want to go year round, you might want to grow part of your space in the summer and then grow part in the winter and occupy your unused ground with a cover crop.
And if you totally have no idea what a cover crop is, I'll just give you a quick example. Clover is a cover crop that people grow. And like my dad was saying, if you have a section of your garden that you're not growing anything in, you plant clover over the whole section of the garden, and it grows up really thick, and it can add nutrients.
Instead of letting it go to weeds.
Right. And it can actually add nutrients back into the soil, and then you can till the plants themselves back into the soil, and it adds organic matter and helps build up your soil. So that's just a quick little note there if you don't, you know, if that was something you totally didn't have any idea what it was. Yeah, so the big take-home message is make your calendar. This is the best time to do it. You know, once your season starts and things start going crazy, you know, it starts getting too late. Although, I will put in here, it's never too late. You can be planting, you know, even if you don't get your plants in at the summer, there's things that you can plant for the fall. And you can have great veggies, you know. You can have a fall garden if you miss the spring. And if you miss the fall, there is a certain time where you're going to have to wait a long time before the plant, before you get anything off of that plant. So by the time you pass midsummer, you know, if you plant something, you're pretty much going to have to wait until almost the next spring, at least midwinter, before you're harvesting it. But yeah, make your calendar. This is a great time to do that. All right, so let's transition into some talk time here. And it looks like we've got a couple of you on here. Like I said, there's a lot less people that actually get on these calls than sign up. And kind of a neat thing about that is that we can make this a real intimate time with you all to talk as long as you want, really, on what kinds of questions you have about your garden, any ideas that you have about your garden. So it looks like right now we've got two of you on, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to unmute your phones one at a time, And I just ask you to introduce yourself to us. Tell us your name and tell us where you're from, where your garden, where your home is, where you're going to be gardening. Oh, and look, there's someone else just jumped on too. So we've got three of us on here now. All right. So just to fill you in real quick, I'm going to be unmuting each person's phone here. We're jumping in. We just finished talking about planning your garden and some tips on planning your garden. And I'm going to be unmuting. Now we're transitioning into a time where we're going to talk together, all together, and talk about each of your gardens and any questions that you have. I mentioned at the beginning of this call, we really want this call to be interactive and a call that can help you as much as possible specific to your needs. And so we really want that interaction to be able to talk with you and get to know you. So I'm going to be unmuting each of your phones, and when I unmute you, going to ask you to introduce yourself, tell us your name, tell us where you're from, where your home is, where your garden is. So I'm going to start out here. Welcome to the call. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, Paul. This is Kim Reed, and I'm over here in Colton, Oregon. I actually thought I wasn't going to be able to get onto the call tonight, but I'm thankful that I did. I'm in Colton, Oregon, which is southeast of Portland, about 35 miles. I live at 2,000 feet elevation, and I have about a 20 by 30 garden. It's fenced. A larger area is fenced, so I have three almond trees in there and a compost pile and some other space, a lot of space for my husband to mow. I'm the one that planted asparagus seed. I dumped about a third of a package into a paper towel, damp paper towel, and let it all go to seed. And it's like, oh my, now I have all these in my living room on the table, and they're about 10 inches tall now, over 100 plants.
Wow.
So now, just a day or so ago, I was on my way home, and I noticed up above us on the mountain that there's snow, and it was 37 degrees that day. What do I do with these asparagus plants? They're starting to fall over because they're very thin and fragile, and I'm trying to keep them watered, but not too much. I got your email about the damping off, and they've actually done pretty good. But I don't know. We don't have any place specifically for them, except inside the garden fence. We do have a very big problem with deer and elk, other mountainous creatures.
Yeah.
And so what do I do with these asparagus plants?
Hey, that's a great question, Kim, and we'll jump right back to it. And thanks so much. You know, something really neat is we actually lived up in Oregon there for a little while. My grandfather was up there, and we were taking care of him.
We were in
mm-hmm.
Silverton.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, for
mm-hmm.
about three.
Nice years. Area, banana belt.
Yeah, we love it up there. I'm going to go ahead and let the other two introduce themselves as well, and then we'll come back and we can start going through your questions. Thanks so much for telling us about your garden, though.
Right.
All righty. Welcome. You should hear a little phone unmuted message. Welcome to the call, and tell us your name and where you're from. Hi, are you there?
You just unmuted me again. This is Kim.
Oh, did I unmute you twice?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was someone else here that had a phone number ending in 7848 that I thought I unmuted.
Oh, can you hear us?
Yes.
Can you hear us?
I hear you.
Hi, this is it's Carrie and Linda Neal.
Oh, hi. Hi, Uncle Carrie.
How are you?
Hi.
Hey, we know where you're from.
Good
well, go ahead.
For the other callers, Carrie's my cousin.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a real privilege to have you on the call here.
Okay, they're in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah, so you've got quite the climate there to be growing stuff in. All right, I'm going to go ahead and unmute the next person here. There was someone that just jumped on the phone, and what we're doing is we're just introducing ourselves and telling where we live, where our garden is, and then we're going to start talking about questions about our garden. So welcome to the call. You should hear a little message on your phone that says that I unmuted you, and just introduce yourself and let us know where you're from.
Hi, I'm Francine Morgan. I am from California. I have no knowledge or experience with gardening, but I'm taking the class because I do want to be able to know how to plant veggies and fruits organic. With the little space that I have, I am living in a gated community, so there's many restrictions. But whatever space I can use to plant, I am pretty much open. Thanks.
Okay, Princey, which part of California are you living in?
I'm in Huntington Park.
Okay, down in Southern California.
It's in Southern California, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Good. I grew up in Southern California.
Good.
Well, that's great. We're privileged to have you join the class here.
Okay.
All right, one more caller here. I'm going to unmute your phone and go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
My name is Randy Hall. I also live in San Diego, so I also live in California. And it's the house that we're at right now, it's just basically bedrock. So we want to put a box, a little plant garden above ground. So that's why we're getting into this, so we can also learn how to do organic.
That's great, Randy.
Okay.
That's great. All right. Hey, we're so glad to have you all on the call here. And let's go ahead and go back, first of all, to Kim, and let's talk about your asparagus. So go ahead and repeat your question there, Kim. You're wondering what to do with the asparagus?
You caught me with a mouthful. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I am. My asparagus is, I started them with seed, about 100 plants. I've given away a dozen of them, but that was above and beyond the 100. They're sitting on a table that my husband has rigged up a grow light on. I haven't used the grow light because it's right in front of a window, a kind of a south window. And these asparagus plants are close to 10 inches tall. They're doing really fine. They're starting to do their little leafy fern-like look. And we just put in a front entry that's all enclosed. And I'm wondering, should I transplant those? The plugs that they're in are probably about 2 inches tall, maybe 1.5 by 1.5 by 2. And should I transplant those into something that's deeper? I'm using organic starting mix and organic fertilizer in them. If I transplant them into something that's deeper, then should I just put them out into the front entry so that I don't just stick them right out into the cold?
What was that? Yeah, do you know, Kim, what your average last frost date is?
I looked it up after you sent the email, Paul, and I think it's sometime toward the end of April.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, as long as it's not like the end of May or something, you know, where it's weeks away, if it's just
mm-hmm.
a couple weeks away, they should
mm-hmm.
still be fine in the little plugs. You know, they might be pushing the limits on you know, the growing space in those plugs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would be quite worth the work, you know, transplant, you know, potting them on into something bigger and then you know, just a couple of days or a few days later, you know, a week later, max maybe 2 weeks later, you know, putting them, transplanting them outside, you might just want to leave them in those little plug trays and just wait.
And then I saw in your email you said to plant them like 8 or 10 inches deep, something like that, in a post hole dug hole with, I assume, some manure or some organic matter in there with it, and plant them about halfway up.
Right.
I've really never dealt with asparagus before, but I'm sure excited to.
Yeah, this is great. In fact, just was it yesterday or the day before, we ate the first pickings of our asparagus this year off of our plants. That was exciting. So I'm really happy for you. Yeah, I'll just give you a little rundown of how you can do it. You dig the hole, like you were saying, like I told you, about 8 inches deep, and then put your little asparagus plant down in there and fill the hole up, you know, cover the little plugs that the asparagus is growing in with, and like you said, it's great to put compost in there. If you have earthworm castings or some type of organic compost that you can put in there for, you know, extra boost for the plant. And then fill the hole, don't fill the hole all the way up, you know, you don't want to bury your asparagus, but this helps it grow down deep. And so just fill it in with, you know, maybe 3 inches of dirt, 4 inches of dirt. But don't be covering up your asparagus. And then as your asparagus grows larger, you come back and fill the rest of the way in with dirt. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. How far apart shall I put the plants?
I believe it was 18 inches. So you'll want
that sounds like an awful lot of space.
Yeah.
They will grow to be very large. They can be 6 feet tall, and they just get bigger and bigger every year.
Oh, my. So they spread?
Well, the crown under the ground will get bigger, and they'll send out shoots in a larger and larger area each year. So
okay.
That single plant can be sending out shoots from, an area, you know, about a radius of a foot or so.
Okay, now, do the deer bother them?
That is a
good
question.
I mean, I can plant them all around the inside of my fence, but then I'm planting a little bit underneath of my almond trees, and I don't know if they have to have full sun or just what.
They prefer full sun, but they can take a little shade. They'll just be a little bit more vigorous and with full sun. I don't, you know, we have a lot of deer on our farm, and there are certain things they like that we have learned that we have to fence, otherwise we won't get a crop, and other crops they don't touch. We have not noticed them going after our asparagus. I can't guarantee that they won't go after yours, because they sometimes have different tastes in different places. But
yes, on our little place, they seem to like everything that I've planted outside of the fence.
Yeah, the other thing I was just going to say there is that we do have dogs as well, and so that can make a difference with keeping the deer away.
The dogs. But I've seen deer tracks, you know, around right in front of our barn, and I know that the deer are around even with the dog.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it so much. And any other words of wisdom about the asparagus is great.
Yeah, one other thing that I would just throw in there, I put it in my email there as well, is if you are doing a couple of rows of asparagus next to each other, you'll want them 5 feet apart.
Why?
Yeah, or 6. Well, again, the asparagus will grow up into a like a large shrub. They can be 6 feet tall and 6 feet mm-hmm. wide. We have a friend who has 6 acres of asparagus, and he's planted his rows, I think they're 6 feet apart.
It could be.
Wow.
But anyways, he said that they you can barely walk between the rows in the summer when the asparagus is bushed out.
Wow. So it's like a bush.
Yeah, huh. It grows into a large bush.
Okay.
I mean, that doesn't – our asparagus is – we've been planting for the last 3 years, we've been planting a little asparagus each year, and
mm-hmm.
the asparagus that's the oldest, that's 3 years old, is not that size yet. But it might
okay.
be 3 or 4 feet tall. I mean, it's not tall now. It'll grow that – to that height during the summer, and then it dies in the fall, and we mow it off, so there's nothing, you know, showing above ground for the winter.
Okay.
And
okay.
then you get the shoots coming up in the spring that you pick for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can pick them for 4 to 6 weeks, and then you need to
right.
stop picking them and let the plant grow.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically five feet apart the rows, but within the row you plant them 18 inches apart.
Yeah.
So where we're planning on digging is in grass. It's all sod there. My husband says, what am I going to do? I'm supposed to mow that area. If I just put these plugs down in the ground, he's going to have trouble mowing. Should I just lay, like, newspaper and straw over the whole area? So he doesn't have to mow that?
Yeah, that would be good. What we do is we actually dug almost like a trench
mm-hmm.
that we put our plants in and
okay.
and then filled it in. But then we took off all the grass for,
mm-hmm.
you know, about I would say at least a foot to a foot and a half on each side of the trench, and then put we put some compost on, and then put a thick layer of wood chips, some kind
mm-hmm.
of mulch, that
mm-hmm.
and you. You'd want to make it pretty heavy, put even up to 4 to 6 inches if you can, so that it'll keep the weeds from growing. The biggest problem with growing asparagus organically is the weeds growing up among it in the summer.
Okay. Well.
The newspaper idea is a good idea too. That would help to keep the weeds out. You could put newspaper or cardboard or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I would cover it with some kind of a heavy mulch material
mm-hmm.
again, just to kind of make sure it stays in place and to keep that area.
I've tried to encourage him that the more mulch I put down in the grassy area, the less he has to mow, which doesn't hurt
yeah.
his feelings any.
Right, yeah. If you know.
Okay,
one,
well, thank you.
One idea, if you, yeah, you should just have a narrow strip of 2 or 3 feet of grass between each asparagus bed, you know, between your rows. So that should make mowing easier.
Mhm. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Kim, and that's great. Keep up the good work with your garden there. That's really exciting. I love hearing about your
Thanks.
Asparagus. All right. Looks like Randy has a question here, and just for everyone else, if you have something that you want to say, if you press 5 and then star on your keypad, then it comes up with a little thing on my computer, and I can see that you, it's kind of like raising your hand. Randy did that here. So good job for you there, Randy. So if any of you have anything that you want to say while we're talking, just press the 5-star, and I'll definitely, you know, come back to you. So let's go ahead to Randy here. Looks like you've got a question or have something that you want to put in here.
Yes, I do. Yes, please. Right now, where we're staying, there is a canyon behind us, so there's no fence or anything. So we have rabbits and rattlesnakes and everything else that crawl up the backside. And we want to build a box and start a little garden, learning how to. So first of all, we really need to know, because our box will be in sun all the time. The way the sun goes, it just fries our backyard. So we basically need to know what kind of soil, a good recipe for soil, and what would you do to protect from rats and rabbits? And, you know, do you have a recommendation for the soil type of what kind of compost or whatever should I use recipe? We want to mainly do just vegetables and some fruits.
Is this a grow box, kind of like a raised bed that you're thinking of doing? Like you're going to put in
like
your own soil mix into it?
Yes, yes. Taking some 2x6s, 2x8s, and making ourselves a bed in the back.
Okay.
We have an area that's probably 15x8.
Got mail.
Won't have to cover the whole thing, but, you know, we want to start and see what we can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doing organic. Is there a recipe that you could send us via our email address?
Yes, in fact, I'm just jumping on to the garden in the classroom area. If you go to, let me see here, I think it's under, Module 1 in the lesson on growing in beds, not rows. No. Is it in that one? No, it's in the lesson on bed preparation, I think. We've got a couple places here that we have a soil mix. And there's a potting soil mix that we use for starting our starts. And that is something that you could do. Although if you're doing this inside a grow box or something like that, then you might want to incorporate some real topsoil or something. Our potting mix doesn't actually have topsoil in it. What our potting mix is it's basically half peat moss, half compost, or we use earthworm casting. So it's basically a peat moss compost mix, and then we put some perlite in it. That's those little white flecks. I don't know if you bought potting mix before. You see those little white things, and that helps with moisture retention in it. It's a great
mix. Is that called?
Perlite.
Perlite?
Yes. Perlite.
Another similar product, I mean, it has a similar action in the soil, is called vermiculite. And
spell that, please.
Pardon?
Spell that, please.
But okay, it's vermiculite.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and that might be helpful for you because, like you were saying, it gets really sun-baked. So I'm guessing it probably dries out really easy.
Yes.
And what I understand is that vermiculite is, I mean, both of the perlite and vermiculite both hold and retain moisture. But vermiculite is made from clay, whereas perlite is made from some kind of volcanic rock. And I'm thinking for a garden soil, vermiculite might actually be better to having some sort of a clay in your soil mix.
And actually, if I remember right, and this would go along with what my dad Edwin just said, is that vermiculite actually tends to hold the water more. It's like a sponge that really holds the water more. While perlite does hold the water, it drains a little bit easier, and so it's nicer for a starter mix because you want your blocks to be able to drain. But if you're using it in a bed like that, and especially where you are, you might want to go with the vermiculite.
The reason we use perlite, or at least part of the reason, is because our soils are quite heavy in clay, so we don't feel a need to add clay to them. But if you're making your own soil, clay is a good thing to have in it.
Okay. Is there is there a certain depth of each thing we should use before we mix? I mean, how do you know what the ratio should be?
Okay. So here's a ratio that I'll give you for your grow bed. And that is that you could do an equal mixture of compost.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be, you want it to be really well decomposed compost. They call it humus. Or it could be earthworm castings. That would be another great thing that you could use. In fact, we're actually using that basically in replacement of compost right now. But, yes, a good quality compost.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could put in some coarse sand or topsoil, like a topsoil mix,
mm-hmm.
just some regular dirt mixed with your compost. So equal part of compost, topsoil or sand, also an equal part of peat moss. And peat mm-hmm. moss is something that you can get by, it's like a big bale size.
Okay.
At like a lawn and garden center, and then the vermiculite. And you could basically just do an equal mixture of those four ingredients.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to, I'm sure you're probably writing it down right now. It's also written down in module number one, under planning and preparation, in the bed preparation lesson, there's a little
mm-hmm.
green drop-down box under the videos. If you scroll down past the videos, it has a little one that's called soil mix, and there it has it listed out there as well. So just to give you another little reference.
Okay, module number one, green drop-down box. Okay, got it.
Yes, under the lesson
awesome.
Bed preparation.
Bed preparation.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you much. I appreciate all your help.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my question.
Thanks, Randy. That's great.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Yes.
All right. It looks like Uncle Kerry has something to jump in here. All right. I think that we got your phone unmuted there.
Yeah, you did, I think. Well, we have a question. I've built some raised beds. They're actually about 3 feet tall.
They're empty.
That we're going to fill with soil. The question we had was had to do with how do you get worms, or what kind of worms do you get into the soil if you're filling these relatively thick boxes with soil.
And you have ground cloth, Gary.
That's a great question.
You can buy worms to put in there? You know, I think you could.
Well, yeah, I know that you can.
Yeah, the place that we buy our worm castings from, they're growing worms for sale for fishing. So I guess you can go to a fish and tackle store and I've never bought worms like that, but I'm quite sure. They have different kinds. They have red worms, but I go for the real earthworms. They would.
But there's red wigglers or something like that they use for the worm castings, or the.
The worm castings we get actually come from earthworms, but they're raising those earthworms for sale. But there is another kind of worm, the red wigglers that they also raise for fish bait, that and they make castings as well. But you want to get the regular earthworms.
Yeah.
Regular earthworms, okay.
Yeah.
It is true that it seems like most all of the worm castings on the market are from the little red wrigglers. But I think that, like that said, the worms actually go to being bait versus back into a garden.
Yeah. One thing that we have done that has given us lots of earthworms where we have done it is to put a heavy mulch on, and we've done it with a heavy straw mulch when we were living in Arkansas before we moved here. Somebody gave me an old bale of hay, and this was one of the big round bales, and I just rolled it out on a spot that we wanted for a garden. And I made it probably three to four inches thick, and we left for a couple weeks of vacation and came back, and I was wanting to put some tomatoes in, and I was pounding in stakes, and earthworms were just jumping out of the ground all over. It was amazing. And it was just kind of a sparsely grassed, place. It didn't look very healthy at all. It had very little grass on it prior to putting the mulch down. I don't think there was a lot of earthworm activity there. But once they get a nice, cool, moist environment, they just start multiplying. Mm-hmm. And we've done it again here using wood chips on our flower bed.
We had put a weed cloth underneath these boxes that we built, partly because the soil that we're on is pretty poor. We didn't want all these different stuff coming up from underneath it, grass we were trying to kill underneath it.
Okay.
So this will be, there's a barrier between the native soil and these deep boxes. That's also why we built them so deep, was for the, so they have plenty of root thing.
Well, I would suggest then see if you can buy some earthworms. And again, though, if you put a mulch, like a straw mulch, on top of your soil, that would just really encourage the earthworms to multiply.
Do you have to worry about the seeds in the mulch? Like the hay?
If you're direct seeding into the bed, then you need to have the mulch pulled aside so that the seeds can have some sun and grow. Transplant into the mulch.
I meant the hay seeds becoming weeds in your garden.
Oh, yeah. Some people don't always. I didn't know the difference between straw and hay, but hay is just stuff mowed off a field, whatever happens to be there, and it depends on what time they mow it. You might have seeds in there, weed seeds, and I have, in fact, that garden in Arkansas, I had quite a few weeds come up from that hay mulch. But the nice thing was is they're not too hard to pull out because the soil is so moist and soft underneath. But with straw is usually from wheat or some sort of a grain, and you can have seed there too. That's.
Ed, when we were told in Florida to try to find salt marsh grass or something like that, it was kind of like straw,
But we've tried everywhere, any feed stores or anything locally, and we can't find that here. So we were just wondering, we're just having a hard time, you know, because we keep hearing about using straw, say, for mulch, but we're, you know, striking out because we just hear there's seeds in that. So I guess we're kind of at a loss what to use. So you all still use
your area
straw?
Again?
Pardon? What?
How big is the garden box that you're growing
well,
in?
There's four boxes that are 3x12, and then there's four boxes that are 4x4s.
Okay. All right.
As far as the dimensions of them, they're all about the same 3 feet tall.
Right. Yeah, I don't, you know, all I can say is that you with the mulch, you most likely will get some seeds. Now, sometimes you can find somebody who has made hay or straw before the stuff went to seed. If you can know where it actually came from and if the farmer did that, then that would be fine. But most likely you'll get some. But if you can, if you can get the weeds out while they're small, and like I said, they do pull out easily. It would just, you know, take the time to actually pull them out.
In fact, if you can get a bale of straw there, you might want to just get a bale and try it out and see what happens. And you might find that the benefit from the mulching, outweighs the amount of weeds that it has in it. You could do a little trial run and see.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So you guys use straw on your farm?
Yeah, we do. And we get wheat. We use wheat straw, and we get wheat grass coming up. Jennifer
right.
has a whole bag of wheat grass in the refrigerator here that she was weeding it out of an area, and she decided to save it for some wheat grass drink.
Funny.
Gleaning in the field.
You get a double benefit there. we've got straw mulch on our garlic right now, and it's been a blessing. I mean, it's been keeping down most of the weeds.
Huh.
Yeah, it keeps down the other weeds, but we have the wheat grass growing up in it. But like I said, it's not pervasive everywhere. It's a spot here and there. It's not it's not spread evenly through all the straw either.
Right. Right.
Well, that sounds really great, Uncle Kerry.
The other colleague. Well, thank you. We had one other question was how to keep the small mammals out of the garden, like the squirrels and the rats, the guy in television.
Reminds me. I think Randy was kind of asking that same question. We never really got to it about the rats and, was it the rabbits and the snakes where he was?
And squirrels. What do you do?
What do the squirrels? We haven't had a problem with squirrels in our garden. What do they do for you?
Well, we haven't actually planted. We're doing okay where we're living with tomatoes, but in another part of town we used to live in, the squirrels would just eat the tomato plants down to the ground.
Oh.
We had huge fire cage aviary system thing or huge cave plants. But we just
Sorry, you're not coming through clear. Kerry? Linda, we've lost you.
Oh.
Okay, you're back.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're back again.
okay, I don't know what you heard. We'd gone to a gardening class, and the teacher and the students were, you know, all complaining about squirrels and just saying the problem they were. We don't have our gardens, our beds filled yet. But we just hear from others know what tips and rules.
I'm not sure what to say about squirrels. We just have not had a real problem with that. The only thing I could think of would be to use some sort of netting to put up around your garden, and that would keep rats out too.
Okay.
I guess you don't have trees in your garden area, so the squirrels wouldn't be dropping in from above.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So, you know, maybe you could just get some metal T-posts and put them in around, and then take some bird netting that goes over trees and just put that around your T-posts.
Okay.
You can just get some electric insulators, you know, for that snap onto the T-post and use that to hang the netting from.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, that's the end of our question.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Dad was saying, we don't really have experience with the squirrels. I think that's a great idea, what Dad was just saying with the netting. Something that I'll do for you, though, is I'll definitely make a little note down here, and I'll try and look into that a little bit more and see if I can't find some other people that have figured out any solutions for you. Do a little research about that, because that's definitely something that would be worth knowing. All right. Thanks, Uncle Carrie and Aunt Linda. Did you have anything else that you wanted to throw in there? All right. I guess that was it for now. Kim, it looks like Kim had something that she wanted to say. Did you have a question, Kim, or a comment?
Yes, I just heard you mention garlic. I just bought a pound of organic garlic from Azure Standard, and wondering, is it time to plant it now? And what can you tell me about planting garlic?
Okay. Garlic is always planted in the fall, sometime between September and October. You could possibly do it in November, but particularly where you are, September or October would be better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real simple. You just pop open your garlic and take the individual cloves and plant them in with the tip pointing up.
Okay.
Just put them a couple inches under the ground with the tip pointing up.
2 inches underground. How far apart do they need to be?
About at least a foot.
Okay. And then do they need any kind of, like, mulch and compost and all that kind of stuff? Or what kind of soil would be best for them?
They like a fairly rich soil, so you can prepare the bed ahead of time and add some compost and all to it, and then we do like to mulch them, and that we like to put about 3 or 4 inches of straw mulch on them, and that protects them, gives them a bit of protection in the wintertime, and it also helps to keep the weed pressure down in the spring. For us, we'll usually be harvesting our garlic the end of May and early June. I'm guessing you would probably be harvesting a little bit. You'd probably be harvesting later in June.
Okay. So when I harvest, I'm just going to dig it up and it's going to have expanded out to make a whole new head?
Yes, that single clove will make a whole new head. And that single clove will not be part of the head. It won't be part of the bulb that you dig out. You'll know that it's ready to harvest because the leaves will start to turn brown, and you want to get them when it dig it out right just as you notice the leaves starting to die a little bit.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome, Kim. Thanks for the question. All right. Does anyone else have anything else that they would like to talk about? I think Francine, how about you in your garden? How's everything coming with you in California there?
Well,
we forgot to answer Randy's questions about them.
Okay.
Oops, I'm sorry. Something was playing over it. Are you there, Francine?
I am here. I haven't started any gardening. I am starting the first module, but I have a question, though.
Yeah.
I know I don't have the land or to do the planting like some of the participants currently, but what do you think about the garden in a box by Sun Country Gardens?
Hello?
Can you
I'm
hear
sorry,
me?
What was that? Gardening how?
There is a, are you familiar with Sun Country Gardens? Are you familiar with that particular, I guess, organic planting company? Well, it's not a company, but it's a...
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. Well, they have a website, and they sell different items if you're interested in organic planting, but I think the classes are pretty costly. But for me, because I cannot, I don't have land to do my own soil, I was wondering what would I be able to do? Do I have to get a, do I have to buy my soil already prepared?
So are you going to be growing in containers then?
That's what I would have to do, yes, in containers.
Oh. Okay. Paul, why don't you share with her Paul, just share with somebody, I think, before you about a soil mix that's actually in the course. It is part of the course.
Yeah, the soil mix recipe that I was sharing with Randy earlier, you might remember where I was talking about mixing
the compost, the coarse sand, the toxic moss, and the pet moss. And a formalite?
Right.
Four parts? Okay.
Right. So with that mix, those are things that you could, at a garden center or something, you could purchase the compost, purchase the topsoil or the soil. I'm not sure. Do they have bags of topsoil at a garden center? I think
Sometimes
that they do.
They do.
Yeah. Look and see if they have a bag of topsoil. And then the peat moss and the just kind of mix your own. That would be what I would suggest going for. Otherwise, if you have a friend that lives out in the country somewhere, they might be willing for you to come in and take some of their topsoil or something like that, depending on how much land they have and what their garden is like. But you could try and source it out to a friend like that as well. Or if you find a local farmer around the area, they might help you out with a little bit of soil depending on how much you needed or wanted.
Okay. But these particular ingredients to make my soil, like the perlite, the compost, does it have to be organic or does it matter? That's my question.
They usually will be organic because they're pretty basic. If you buy an already prepared soil mix, which you can also do, it may not be organic. It may have chemical fertilizers or other ingredients. So you would have to be careful to buy a soil mix that already says on the bag that it is organic. But if you're getting worm castings or compost, I think you're going to be pretty safe with that. And the peat moss and the vermiculite or perlite and the topsoil, I wouldn't be too concerned about. It would mainly be the compost
preparation and the
organic.
I think all of those things would be acceptable.
Okay. Of course, and I guess in the course, it tell me what's the amount I'm supposed to use for each one of these ingredients, right? What's the amount? Because I won't be doing a large planting, but a small.
Yeah. So with these ingredients, you can just do an equal mixture of the four, and actually, for both. You and Randy here, just a little correction to what I was saying before. I'll just go through the four ingredients real quickly here with just a little correction. The first ingredient is an equal mixture of quality compost with topsoil. So the first ingredient is a mixture that is half compost, half topsoil. The second ingredient is sand, and that could be a coarse sand or fine sand. The third ingredient is peat moss, and then the fourth ingredient is perlite
or
vermiculite, and you do an equal mix of all four of those. So depending on how big your garden bed is, you know, your grow bed, or if you're doing it in little containers, you can do, you know, any however big you want to do this mix. It would just be an equal mix of those four things. The first one being a mix of compost and topsoil, the second one being sand, the third one being peat moss, and the fourth one being vermiculite or perlite. And while I'm talking about that there, you will probably want to put in a little fertilizer mix into that as well to give your plants as well. You definitely want to add like a soil booster mix. It's like a fertilizer mix. In fact, I have a link on that same lesson, the bed preparation lesson under module one, where I list the soil mix recipe. Right underneath it, there's a link out to a soil booster mix that's organic from the Vermont Compost Company, and that's something that you can get to help to revitalize the soil in your containers. Provides nutrients and trace elements to keep your plants lush and healthy. So that's something that you'll probably want to include in the soil that you're going to be growing in.
Okay. Well, in order for me to start planting, I would like to at least as much modules before I start any planting, but at least I have some little knowledge about what to get. And the compost always have to be decomposed, right?
I'm sorry, what?
The compost
is
decomposed, yeah.
Yes.
By definition, if we're saying the compost is decomposed, it should have the look and smell of soil. That's evidence that it has decomposed.
Okay.
Thanks, Francine. Let me go ahead and tell you something about the course as well, Francine. As you're going through the course, you might see that the course is kind of geared for a larger garden than what you might be interested in doing, since you're doing, you know, more of the container gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just encourage you that a lot of the same principles will carry over into your container gardening, and I am planning on making a specific course on container gardening that I'll be giving you as a bonus for free. It might be a little bit down the road, but I am planning on making that. So if you stick around, you'll definitely get that as well.
I'll stick around. Thank you. Well, I am still grateful for the knowledge because you never know. I have future plans anyway, so I'm still open to the course. I am.
That's great. That's great. It's a real privilege to have you.
Thank you.
All right, let's jump back here to Randy. And Randy, I'm really sorry. I just realized we never addressed your rabbit issue either, or the snakes. Maybe we should talk. Well, do you want us to talk about that first, or did you have another comment or question that you wanted to jump on?
My wife does. But yes, I'd like that answered.
Hi, Paul. This is Tracy. I'm Randy's wife. I just had a question about the fact that we are not able to start our garden until probably, I would say, the beginning to mid-June. And I know, I believe that's kind of late in the season. Are there certain things that we should avoid planting at that time that would do better if we do next spring? Do you have any guidelines for that? We're in California. I don't know if you know that, in Southern California.
You're in San Diego area, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you still have plenty of time for a great fall garden, and I think that you should be able to take your fall garden through the winter pretty much.
Yeah.
How cold does it get in the winter? I mean, at night,
Well, this year was a warm winter, unfortunately, but it can get in the 30s on a real winter. But this year,
it doesn't
got as low as 40s.
Into the 20s?
No, not around here.
Yeah, you can easily, you can have a very nice garden all winter long.
So it doesn't matter what I plant, like the same things I plant in March, I can plant in June, July?
No, it will make a difference. There are warm season crops and there are cool season crops, and you'll need to be growing the cool season crops, but they'll grow very nicely for you all winter long.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And if I go somewhere and mention cool season crops versus warm season crops, they should be able to guide me through what that is?
Yes, I'm trying to – I covered different crops here. I don't have that off the top of my head in where it is in the course. I could shoot you an email over – with, you know, some cold season crops versus warm season crops, if you'd like.
That would be wonderful, yeah.
We can, just to give a very quick summary, warm season crops are mostly all fruits, and I'm using a very technical usage of the word fruit. You know, it's something that bear seeds that you're eating, like tomatoes and squash and beans and, you know, things like that. They're a lot, a large amount of the worm season crops are fruits. Okra is a fruit also, you know, the seed pod.
Oh.
I'm using a very technical usage of the word fruit here. It's not
no
the,
problem.
Yeah, not the normal fruits and vegetables usage, but
that gives me an idea. So would it be too late to plant tomatoes in about a month from now?
No, I think it probably wouldn't for you. It would be on the late side, definitely, but you may still get some tomatoes off of them. Especially if you could start your tomatoes now or sometime soon and
mm-hmm.
have them ready to transplant out in a month. And
oh, okay.
I think you would still have a good chance of getting some tomatoes. But then your cool season crops are mostly leaves and roots.
Okay.
So, you know, everything in the brassica family, that's your kale, your cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. All of those things are cool weather crops, and they'll do really nicely for you all winter long. And most of them are pretty frost hardy. The most sensitive ones out of what I mentioned there are your broccoli and cauliflower.
Okay.
They're the most sensitive to frost, but I think if you're not going down into the 20s, even they should be doing fine.
Okay.
And then your root crops like beets and carrots, spinach, not your roots of in potatoes or sweet potatoes. They won't do well.
Oh, okay.
But things like beets and carrots and turnips, radishes. And then also lettuce. Lettuce does very well in cool weather. It's a little more sensitive to frost than kale. But
mm-hmm.
again, if you're not going down into the 20s, I think your lettuce will be fine also.
Okay.
Just real quick. For a full list, and like I said, I can still email it over to you, but for a full list of the cold-tolerant veggies in under Module 10 in the course,
mm-hmm.
The module on season extension, the first lesson in there is called It's All About Timing. And
okay.
So it's first lesson in Module 10, if you scroll down below the video, there's a cold-tolerant veggie list. And then there's also a fall planting calculator. This is a really neat calculator, a link out to a calculator that actually Johnny Selected Seeds has one, and then there's one from Seeds for Generations where you can plug in, it's like your first or last frost dates, and they'll mm-hmm. automatically calculate back for you when you should be planting different crops for a fall garden.
Okay, that's great. I'll just refer to that. You don't need to email me as well.
Okay.
Yeah,
we usually start planting our fall garden in July.
Oh, okay.
So, but for your first question, you were wondering about, you know, what all can you plant in June, and that I'm just going to bounce this off of you, but I would say that you could still be planting like summer squash and zucchini and green beans and
okay.
Pretty much, you know, all of your summer crops, I would say that you could still plant them and get a harvest out of them still this summer. It would just be later on in the summer.
I think you probably could, just given the fact that you live where you live.
Right. I can get away with that because I was thinking of zucchini, tomatoes, potatoes, Those are just a few that come to mind.
Yeah, I think you could probably do all of those.
You might not have as long a harvest, but you could, you know, you would still probably be able to get something from them.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah,
okay, and then the other question was about, we have a lot of rabbits here in our area, and they love to even eat my roses.
This is a really good question, and I had somebody ask me about rabbits a little bit ago, and I was researching it around, and, you know, there's different things that you can do. It seems like putting up a small fence around, you know, it doesn't have to be super high, like 2 to 3 feet high, like a mesh fence around your garden area. It seems like that might be one of your best solutions. Other than that, rabbits are a hard one. Another thing that you could try doing is feeding them. This is actually something that it's kind of like reverse psychology isn't exactly the right concept, but if you have something that they like to eat and you give them an abundance of it and let them, you know, feed on it and let them get full on it, then, you know, they will be less likely to, you know, get in your garden as well. So that's something else that I'll just throw out there for you.
Okay. Whatever works.
I know, it probably sounds funny, but it can work. You know, if you feed them, let them get full, and then they won't bother your garden as much. You know, that's not a guarantee, but it is something to think about. And I think Randy mentioned the snakes. For the most part.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything we can really do about them.
Yeah, there's not a lot that you can do about them. The good news is they're probably not going to be tearing up your garden or, you know, significantly harming your veggies most of the time.
And most of the time they'll be going after rats or mice, which might be harming your garden. So if you can tolerate having a snake or two around, they're probably going to be helping you more than harming you.
Yeah, I was going to say the one big thing is that you might not, you know, you might be the one that really doesn't want them there more than your garden plants.
Yeah.
Can sympathize. Okay. I don't know if I'd want rattlesnakes in my garden either.
No, not at all.
Sorry that I don't have a good way to keep them out.
No, it's fine. I was more concerned about the rabbits because I know they're the ones that are going to love the garden.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I would probably try the little fence first.
Okay.
And see if that works.
Okay.
And shoot me a note.
We'll do that.
You know, tell me how it goes for you. I'd love to hear.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much. This is a huge blessing for us because we've been talking about planting a garden and trying to be a little bit more self-sufficient. Didn't know how to go about it. And then all of a sudden, a friend told me about your, you know, what you do and the webinar, and it was great. It was like all the answers that we need, so thank you very much.
Oh, well, praise the Lord. I'm really, really glad. It's a privilege to have you.
No, thank you.
All right. Hey, it looks like did you have something else that you were going to say there?
Yes, I wanted to ask you one last question. I remember the webinar replay?
Yes.
I did not see it posted on the class. Is it posted? I couldn't locate it.
Good question. That's an excellent question. And I haven't posted it in the class yet. I'm doing a little bit of editing to it so that it doesn't have the full, you know, the whole sales pitch and everything for the class at the end. It still will probably have, you know, some information about that for others that you know, will possibly purchase it later. So I'm just doing a little bit of editing to it, and I'll try and get it into the classroom as soon as I can here. And it'll be under the bonuses section, when you go in the classroom on the left-hand side down at the bottom, under the bonuses, I'll put the webinar in there. So definitely keep your eye out for it, and thanks for asking.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, it looks like someone else joined us here. What we've been doing is we've been going around and covering people's questions and talking about their gardens. And so I'll go ahead and unmute your phone and go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us your name and tell us where you're from.
Well, hey, it's actually Carrie and Linda. We had to call through on a different device because our Skype kept cutting out on us.
Oh, okay. Hey, welcome back. We're glad you made it back in. All righty. Thanks, Kim. And, Francie, hey, well, and actually, like Kim, do you have something else, another question or comment?
Yes, I do. I heard you talking about tomatoes, and here in Oregon, we have, up here at 2,000 feet, we have such a short season. What can I do to have tomatoes that I can actually harvest this year?
We have a very short season, growing season, Julia.
That's a great question. And, okay, there's a couple things that you can do. The first step is to look for some short season tomatoes, some fast growing short season tomatoes that have the shortest time to harvest. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're looking at your seed catalogs and stuff, and I
there's some really tomatoes like Early Girl.
Just a second. My dad here has a...
There are some early tomatoes like Early Girl is one, and there are some others that are,
mm-hmm.
that are good early tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go for those kind of tomato seeds.
So they might not.
So I should actually start them by seed and not by buying them, buying organic plants at the plant nursery.
Right. I would start them by seed, if you can, and.
Well, if you can find varieties at the nursery that are shorter, or that are available early. Now I'm supposing you can get varieties that are, at the nursery, are they selling for people who are planting at a lower elevation?
Yes, exactly. That's right. Normally, I shop down in Portland, and Portland is near sea level, so we're up at 2,000, and so, you know, we have quite a difference in growing season.
Right. So what you could do there is, I'm guessing that those starts are going to be available. They're available down there before you could plant them up at your place.
Yeah, that's
correct. What you could do is you could purchase them and then purchase some larger pots and
mm-hmm.
transplant them into larger pots and just let them get bigger so that
mm-hmm.
you would have a larger plant to put outside when you can put them out.
Mm-hmm. So, but usually I find that when I put the plants out, our nights start getting really cold sometime in September, where normally people down in Portland are still harvesting then and harvesting into sometimes October for tomatoes. And
yeah.
So what can I do to extend it?
If you could put a, you know, I don't know how serious you are, but, a small, simple hoop house, and again, Paul has something on his course, some ideas on ways that you can have simple protection, just a single layer of plastic over your tomatoes can make a significant difference.
Mm-hmm.
And going, you know, several weeks longer.
Okay.
Not horrible.
Yeah, in fact, I would, like my dad was just saying, I'd reference you over to under the Module 10 Season Extension. There's a module mm-hmm. on protecting your veggies, and that covers okay. some different ways that you can extend your season by protecting your veggies. You could use plastic, like my dad was saying. Another product that can be used is called a row cover. It's like a thick mm-hmm. frost cloth that you could use. It kind of acts like a blanket. And in your case with the tomatoes, you'd basically just be trying to keep the frost back from killing them as long as you could.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you would... In your situation, you'd probably want to use these technologies both sides of the season. So you could put them out with some sort of protection over them, and then use that protection again at the tail end of the season.
Okay. So last year when I planted when I had my tomatoes and I went to pick them, they were kind of funky looking at the blossom end. What was, is it blossom end rot or something like that? What causes that, and what can I do to keep it from happening again?
That could, you know, there are a number of different things it could be, but blossom end rot is a possibility. And that is an indicator that you need a bit more potassium in your soil. I'd encourage you to do a soil test if you haven't done one. And
okay.
Again, Paul talks about doing a soil test in the course.
Okay, because
I'm just 7 o'clock. Yeah, so with that, Kim, as well, if you'd like, I could... could email you over something about blossom end rot. Give you just a bit more information about it if you'd like.
I'm open to learning all I can learn about organic gardening. I love it.
That's great. We love it. All right. All right. Does anyone else have or... Are you done there, Kim? Does anyone else have anything that they would like to talk about before we wrap it up this evening?
I'm fine. Thanks so much for your help.
You're welcome, Kim. Thanks for jumping on the call here. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks, everyone, for jumping on the call here. This has been great. We love the interaction with you all. Thanks, Kim and Francine. Randy, Uncle Kerry, and Aunt Linda, we really appreciate you all, and it's a privilege to have you a part of the course, but even more so now to get to know you a little bit better, to hear about your gardens, to talk about your questions. And as we wrap it up, just remember again, like I was saying at the beginning of the call here, now's the time to plan your garden. Get out your pencil and paper, your calendars, your seed catalogs. Start marking them in, put in when you're going to be planting your crops. And this year could be your best year. So I hope that it is your best year in the garden. And we're here to help. I'm here to help. So anytime, you know, we might not always have the answer right off the bat, but the good news is that I have access to information, you know, with my dad, with my uncle, with others, other farmers, potentially as well, to get your questions answered. So if you ever have any questions, even off of these calls, don't hesitate to shoot me an email, and we can try and get those questions answered for you the best that we can. Otherwise, thanks so much, everyone, for jumping on the call this evening. We really appreciate you all and hope that you have a wonderful evening.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks.
Thank
so
you very
much.
Much.
All right.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Night, night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.